Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Finn.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
One of the best MVPs and one ex-MVP. Mark and Rob together offer over 40 years Microsoft experience. Robert Crane. He's an Office Servers and Services MVP, the Director of CIA Ops for over 20 years, and a very sought-after presenter. Visit CIAOps.com. Mark Keane. He's an Azure TSP working at Microsoft, building constructive tension, the productive force that makes customers want to use Microsoft Azure. All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's the Need to Know podcast, all thanks to Rode Microphones. And brought to you by Ingram Micro Cloud. Streamline the provisioning, billing, and management of your clients' popular cloud business applications, including Microsoft Azure, Office 365, Skykick, and more with the Ingram Micro Cloud Marketplace and Cloud Store. Get started now with Azure with the Ingram Micro Easy Azure program at www.ingrammicrocloud.com.au/Microsoft-Azure. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, NGK Podcast, and online at podcasts.needtoknow.cloud.
You're listening to the Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host there, Mark Keane. Mark, how are you?
Good. How are you, Rob? I'm very good this morning. What about yourself?
Oh, you know, keeping busy, getting ready for another round of traveling to various locations around Australia to share the Microsoft cloud information with a group of people. What about yourself?
Me, I'm at the end of the holding pattern. You know, when the planes come in peak hour, landing at the airport, and they can't land them all at once. I think they have to land them with a gap in between of 30 seconds or 60 seconds or whatever it is. And they put them in a holding pattern. It's what I was in for the last 4 weeks while I was waiting for the background check to complete before starting at Microsoft. So that has now completed. So Rob, all your jokes last week on last episode's podcast talking about like my background check, like whether they're going to like whether it's going to clear or not, it's done, it's cleared, so it's all done. So my start date is next Monday. We're recording this on what's today, Thursday, the I'll just check my new Apple Watch, the 26th of October. So yeah, next Monday.
All right, tell everybody about your new toy. Go on.
Well, okay. Apple Watch 3 has just come out. This one cost $599. It's got the LTE. It's got the red little dial on it, which indicates LTE. It's got GPS built into it. It does operate on its lonesome, so I can leave my mobile phone at home and I can go out and about. I can even go interstate wherever and I can make phone calls on my Apple Watch. And you can also send and receive text messages. It's got voice recognition for the text messages. You can also use your finger to scribe. But the other good thing about it too is it's got Bluetooth built into it. And so it's got LTE. You can take a phone call and have a little Bluetooth earpiece to have in your ear. And so you can still use it like a normal phone quite nicely like you would normally. So, and not only that, you can actually talk to it through the actual phone itself. It's got a microphone built into it and it's got a little speaker on it as well, so you can hold it up to your ear and you can actually hear people. If it's nice and quiet in the background because it's only a tiny speaker, you can hear people nicely and it works quite well. So I'm waiting for that to officially work with Telstra. And if you do have a Telstra account, the frustrations just go on and on and on. The business accounts, the old accounting system, which, you know what, it's not really our problem as consumers, but apparently the old accounts are 10 digits long and you need to be on a new account, which is a 13 digit account number. And to migrate across from the old to the new, a lot of people sort of don't understand how you do that even within Telstra. And they think you have to migrate from a business account to a consumer account. But the last I heard was they're gonna migrate me from business to business to the new type with a migration team somewhere, and my phone service might be off at some stage in the next 24 hours for up to 24 hours, which is a bit concerning. So we'll wait and see what happens. But anyway, yeah, that's it. Apple Watch 3. It's not bad.
How long does it hold a charge for, I suppose, is the biggest question.
Oh, well, I easily a day. Like, I'll use it normally. You get notifications on it. It's good for showing the time, and I won't be playing with it 24/7 because you can't. There's only a limited stuff you can do with it. It's not like a phone where you're playing with it more so. I mean, you want to play with it more because it's a cool little toy, but you can't because the screen's so small and the app ecosystem is not as big as the iPhone. And so because you sort of can't play with it that often, and emails are a little bit limited as well, then the battery does seem to last quite some time. And so I reckon it would easily go for 2 days, probably more so.
Okay, all right. Well, now that we've had an update on the Apple Watch, I'm sure we'll get a further update next week when Mark has his communications all sorted out.
By the way, one little piece of information. If you are with Telstra, the product that you need to inquire about is Telstra One. That's the product. That's the one where you, your Apple Watch and your phone work together. And so it's paired, but it's not paired like Bluetooth, Rob. It's paired in the Telstra ecosystem.
So people get a special discount if they go to the store and mention Mark Keane?
Possibly. I don't know. We'll see. But they should do. I mean, all the pain they've put me through in the past. But so if somebody rings you on your normal, you don't even have to get a new mobile number. If somebody rings you, I think it's going to ring on two devices. That's what I'm told. Likewise, if you make a phone call out on your Apple Watch, when you've left your phone at home, the phone call will come out from your number. So it's across the two devices. The technology is called eSIM in the Apple Watch. It's not actually a SIM card that you put in. It actually comes built in to the chipset eSIM. So, yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, why don't we get into the news? Because we do have some other interviews at the end of this. So one of the things around the Office 365 world we're beginning to see, and Microsoft has started to detail, is the integration between Office 365 and LinkedIn. So for those of you who aren't aware, Microsoft went out and purchased LinkedIn for about $16.7 or something billion dollars.
Massive acquisition.
And a lot of people look at it and say, oh, it's a bit of a waste of money. But when you see that Microsoft is going to take a lot of that information and start surfacing it in places like Office 365. So we've got Delve there, which gives us information about people inside our tenant. But now, thanks to the integration with LinkedIn, you'll be able to get a connection to that information that users have in their LinkedIn, and potentially when you have contacts outside your organization, you'll be able to bring that in as well. So a link there that we'll put in the show notes as to how to enable that. Pretty straightforward. We're also getting a roadmap now for Skype for Business integration with Teams. So again, for those of you who may not be aware, Skype for Business is rolling into Microsoft Teams. All the callings are being rolled into that client, that product. And it's not happening overnight, but Microsoft have given us now a roadmap for when all these sort of features are going to be seen within Teams. If you want the latest, make sure that you are obviously on the first release program, which you can do within your tenant to all or a selected group of users. So that'll make sure that you get all the nice new features. Hopefully we should see the PSTN calling coming to Australia in a short period of time, but no news on that specific.
That's good news.
I think that's probably got always to do with the that same company you were talking about, Mark. So that may be part of the issue as well. We've also got a new compliance manager. So Office 365 is very good at making sure things are compliant, are up to date, and you're making sure you cover all your regulations. But that has been in a few disparate places. So Microsoft is now bringing those together in a single pane of glass that you'll be able to view to make sure that all your information is compliant, and we will find that in the new compliance manager preview that is coming shortly, and details will be in the show notes. So what about Azure? What's been happening in Azure, Mark?
Well, you know, talking about the previous company, Telstra, and Azure, so the two together, they relate to, I'll just quickly throw in this thing called Azure Files. Now, there's a tip, I guess, I can give you. And I know there's a lot of people probably listening who do have accounts with Telstra, and I've been watching on the Twitter sphere. The way to get things done at the moment with Telstra is you lodge a complaint, because generally you can't get anything done normally, unfortunately. It's the world we live in. And you wait for about 4 or 5 days, and there's a good chance they won't respond, unfortunately. I don't know why. Anyway, then you chase it up with the telecommunications ombudsman with the complaint number, and then you can get stuff done. Just a tip, that's the way I've been handling my cases just in the past few months.
So you're offering that service to everybody who contacts you, are you?
No. Just Google search telecommunications.
Sorry. Step back there. What search?
You know, like, this is a new Microsoft, all right? Come on, bring your Apple devices, bring your Android devices, whatever you want. It's open. It's open for everything. It's a new Microsoft. It's fine. Or you can do a big search.
If anybody from Microsoft is listening, note that we talked about Apple and that other search engine before. We talked about Microsoft, and it wasn't me, it was my co-host over there.
Okay, now Microsoft. Now, Azure Files, Rob, outbound, it connects outbound. We all know outbound on port 445. Right, I have got a BigPond cable connection at home. I've told you this before, Rob, but I haven't really sort of told the listeners. BigPond cable connection at home, it's a business account. So for all intents and purposes, I am a business operating with a Telstra BigPond account, which is cable account, which is fine. However, port 445 is blocked at the ISP level, which means I can't make use of Azure Files. And so I call up, been calling up for quite some time in the past year, only to be told that, no, we don't block any ports, and throwing it back at me saying the modem's at fault or you're at fault, you're dreaming and all this sort of stuff, which is crap. But anyway, I've taken that through to the as a complaint, and it's at the ombudsman at the moment because it's apparently too hard to resolve. And so anyway, so if you do have a BigPond cable connection, and with Azure Files, all the greatness, all the good stuff that's coming out, like as in Azure File Sync that came out, that was announced at Ignite a few weeks ago, then hopefully with any luck, I should be able to get that resolved for you, and we'll get a direction as a way forward how to unblock 445 on your cable connection if you do have cable. And by the way, if you've got NBN, like a mate of mine who put NBN in just recently at his business based in Burwood, there's a couple of ways, Rob. We talked about this. You can do NBN. He's got the telephone line version of NBN coming into his modem. It's VDSL. And he's got 100 down and 40 up. And is it 100 down? I think it is. It's 100 down and 40 up. He's got the fastest one. With him, he's making use of Azure Files and Azure Files Sync, and it works. So yeah, the NBN network, it seems to be okay on that, which is good because it's a nice, fast connection to Azure. And
would you like me to do the Azure news now that you've talked about everything else?
Speaking of fast in Azure, well, I can cover this off, Rob, because I'm on that subject, talking about fast and Azure. Rob, FV2, the F series of VMs version 2 are now available. The fastest... Speaking of fast, it's the fastest VMs on Azure. Okay, so they're now generally available. They offer the Intel Xeon Scalable Processor, codename Skylake. It's the fastest Skylake CPU in the public cloud today. The closest cloud competitor offering Skylake currently only supports 2.0 gigahertz. The VM sizes are hyper-threaded and run on the Intel Xeon Platinum 8168 processor featuring a base core frequency of 2.7 gigahertz and a maximum single core turbo frequency of 3.7 gigahertz. Whopping speeds. Now remember, hyper threading, Rob, do you know what that is when it's enabled?
What's the threads?
Well, here's the technical term for it. It's a quantity of logical processes will be double to that of the physical cores. Alrighty, so normally without hyper-threading, it's one logical processor to each physical core, but now it's double. So two logical processors for each physical core. And remember, a virtual CPU, which is vCPU, equates to one logical processor. Okay, so it matches up. So a virtual CPU executes on a logical processor. So in other words, the more logical processors, the more virtual CPUs you can have. And so we mentioned this on the last podcast we did, because we're essentially saving, Microsoft's passing that saving on to you as a customer by allowing you to run more workloads on top of the physical infrastructure. Good news.
Excellent. All right, well, I'll take backup and recovery for 100, please, Alex.
Okay. Hey, what are you talking about?
That's all right. I'll explain it later, Dr. Jeopardy. Let's go.
okay, all right. The FV2 series of VMs will be available in 7 sizes, the largest size featuring 72 virtual CPUs and 144 gigs of RAM. These sizes will support Azure Premium Storage Disks by default and will also support accelerated networking capabilities for the highest throughput of any cloud and ultra-low VM to VM latencies. Available only at the moment in West US 2, West Europe and East US. So not even Southeast Asia, which is surprising. Anyway, Southeast Asia is coming soon, as well as other regions. There is a link in the blog and the show notes. Now, speaking of fast, we talked about fast before with like fast NBN connections and fast, actually, I better move on from that because a lot of people don't have fast NBN. Anyway, moving right along. Yes, so fast connection. Speaking of fast VM sizes, Cray Supercomputers is the other announcement which are coming to Azure. So an exclusive partnership with Cray, it'll provide customers unprecedented access to supercomputing capabilities in Azure to solve the toughest challenges in massive compute workloads, for example, climate modeling, precision medicine, energy manufacturing, and other scientific research. This will help you harness the power of HPC, which is high-performance computing, and AI, which is artificial intelligence, in an agile and cost-effective way. Microsoft and Cray are working together to bring customers the right combination of extreme performance, scalability, and elasticity. You can get dedicated Cray XC or CS series supercomputers in Azure. A link to that in my blog and in the show notes.
So is it time to move off the coast of Costa Rica and in research DNA? Is that now possible?
Yes, sure is. It's coming. It's there. So it's awesome. Like, it's nothing you can't really do. And Rob, you might, if you had enough money, you could possibly run your own Bitcoin mining server farm, or if maybe possibly.
If you had, I'm sure that's something that you'll cover in the next episode and give us a PowerShell script to make it all happen.
Oh, that'll be brilliant, wouldn't it? Just like double-click the PowerShell. Oh, you can't double-click. Right-click Run with PowerShell. It'll set it all up and just watch the Bitcoins come in. That'll be awesome.
All right, so remember you heard it here first. Get the source code on Mike Keane's GitHub repository.
The intro will basically say, opinions are my own in this podcast.
Jeez, I'd be worried if they were from somebody else. But anyway, okay. What else you got?
All right, last point on the news item is Azure Container Service, AKS. So that's not really short for Azure Container Service, is it? No, it's AKS, which the K, you could spell container with a K, not really. It sounds like with a K. It could be with a K, but it's actually, the K stands for Kubernetes. So in other words, where you see AKS, which is talking about Azure Container Service, it's talking about managed Kubernetes. Now, first of all, Rob, what is Kubernetes? It is something that originated with Google. It's an open source platform for automating deployment, scaling, and operations of application containers across clusters of hosts. It provides most options and flexibility out of all the others, which is DCOS and Docker Swarm. Can fully manage the underlying cloud infrastructure and natively integrates with Azure resources, can scale up the number of containers in a cluster and also add virtual machines to the agent pool. It manages exposure to the outside world by using the Azure Load Balancer while deploying a container, i.e. changes its own infrastructure to accommodate workloads. For instance, it can make changes to the load balancer while deploying a container that hosts a web server. It is the most complex container cluster product compared to the others, which is DCOS and Docker Swarm. So with AKS, which is Managed Container Service, you get the benefit of open source Kubernetes without complexity, because we talked about complexity before, and also too, you don't get the operational overhead, which is awesome, because Kubernetes, Rob, is quickly becoming the standard when it comes to managing your containers. So AKS, here's the good part. It's free. Unlike other cloud providers who charge an hourly rate for the management of infrastructure, with AKS, you'll pay nothing for the management of your Kubernetes cluster. Pay only for what you consume. So in addition to the launch of AKS, Microsoft have announced the general availability of managed SKUs, Azure Container Registry, and the preview of Azure Container Registry geo-replication. Yeah, all coming that, all happening. Link to that in my blog and in the show notes. Rob, containers. Gotta love them.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
Gotta love them.
All right, so Two more short ones from me on Office 365. Firstly, Microsoft has introduced the idle session timeout for SharePoint and OneDrive. So that means when you're browsing the site, you can now, as an administrator, set how long the page can remain idle before it times out and the user needs to re-authenticate to get access to that information.
What is it,
a handy little feature to make sure that the security of your information in SharePoint and also OneDrive is more secure thanks to timing out the browser session that are inactive.
The other one
I've got is a very short one here that they're updating the way sharing emails work in OneDrive. So basically, what they're doing is they stopped CCing the sender when the emails were sent out, and they would put that in the sent items folder for the user. And they've basically taken feedback, and those people who are sharing may not have Exchange Online and were relying on the CC field as part of their workflow. So they're basically resuming the CC sharing of emails when the user does not have Exchange Mailbox. So a small thing, but we'll put that in the show notes so that you're up to date and you can have a look at the specific details. But with that, I think that we're probably covered all the news that we've got at the moment. Anything else from you, Mark?
Yeah, I was going to ask that news article before the last one you read about the timeout. What's the current default timeout at the moment?
Well, I think it's something like 15 minutes. I think it depends on a couple little different things. I'd have to check the specifics, but I think it's around 15 minutes of idle time that it probably will time out. And there are some variables there. There's a option when you log into Office 365 that says keep me logged in when you first log in. So again, I think if you check that, then I'm not sure the idle actually does time out. So again, it's a fairly lengthy amount of time that it does remain open, and there are some variables there. But as an admin now, you can go and force it maybe to 5 minutes or 2 minutes when there's inactivity on the browser window, which I think is very good.
Tell you what's got a timeout interval which is quite low is, and a shout out to openedx.microsoft.com, which is the, it's great. That's got a timeout on it, which is quite low and quite short, which it sort of is. I mean, you can save your passwords with LastPass. Shout out to LastPass, which is a good place to save your credentials. It's one of the products that you can use, which integrates into your browser. But yeah, that's got a short timeout on it too, which is...
Yeah, so a lot of these services do have that control, and now as an admin in Office 365, you can go and control that for users and, again, keep your information more secure and prevent users leaving their browser open for an extended period of time with access to potentially information you want to remain secure. But I think that is basically all that we've got for this episode. How do people get in touch with the Mark Keane?
Okay, Twitter's probably the best, which is at Mark Keane, which is M-A-R-C K-E-A-N. And also need to remember to thank our sponsors, which is Rode Microphones. Couldn't have done this podcast without our Rode mics, because Rode mics are pretty cool. Oh, and also too, I think there's a bit of a tip I want to quickly throw out there. If you're using the Rode NT-USB, which is the USB microphone, the black one, in Windows, if you set the recording level not up to 100 where it is by default, set it to around 75, okay, with the level, you're not going to get distortion. Because I listened to a certain MVP with his Rode NT USB mic do a video, and it was slightly distorted because by default it puts it up to 100 for the volume. So bring it down to 75 and it won't be distorted, and it'll be really, really nice. So there we go. So Rode, and also Ingram Micro Cloud. You can also follow us on Twitter, which is N2K Podcast is the Twitter handle, and Facebook, Rob, as well. Excuse me.
N2K Podcast again.
That's right.
And podcast.needtoknow.cloud if you want the show notes. We'll make sure those go up shortly and get contact with me on the Twitter at DirectorCIA. But I think with that, we're done and dusted. Another episode in the can, and we look forward to the next episode of the Need to Know podcast. So I'm joined here by Benjamin Elias. Welcome, Benjamin. How are you?
Hi, Robert. I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Excellent. All right. Well, why don't you give everybody a bit of an introduction about who you are and what you do before we get into the meat of our discussion?
So my name is Ben Elias, and I run a company called Ideocial, and that is a software as a service platform which provides an innovation plugin for Microsoft's enterprise social platform Yammer. So basically bringing innovation as a use case to Microsoft's product.
Excellent. All right, so you're also a Microsoft MVP as well, I believe?
That's right.
Excellent. All right, that makes it much easier. So we only allow MVPs on here, especially my co-host who actually is getting a job with Microsoft shortly and will no longer be an MVP, so I don't know if I'll allow him back on the podcast, but anyway, that's not for you to decide. So I think that probably a good place to start is for the average person, the average, you know, smaller business out there, what is Yammer? How would you describe that to someone in the street? What exactly is Yammer if someone asked you?
So Yammer is this, what we call it is enterprise social. So you take the consumer social networking sites, so Twitter, Facebook, and those sort of things, and you provide an analogy which sits in your company and is private to your company largely. So you can have conversations with people in your company, upload photos, chat about things, and that all sits privately within your space. So you're having a conversation which is a public conversation, but an internally public conversation. And so, that's an incredibly powerful tool for community within your organization.
One of the things that I come across, and I totally agree with you, but I come across anyway is this cultural concept that isn't Yammer just Facebook? You know, aren't we worried that it'll turn into, you know, pictures of cats and videos of Donald Trump or something like that? I mean, is that basically a cultural thing? I mean, yeah. How do you overcome that sort of stereotype in the enterprise?
So the difference between consumer social media and enterprise social is basically the point in time where you understand value of your network. So I used to work at a bank before I did the startup thing, and we used to have this Excel group, and I was pretty handy with Excel. And there are a few other people who are handy with Excel, and people used to post Excel problems to this group, which were, you know, I need to sort by some weird setting or something like that. And because there were a few people who monitored this group and we had some spare time, people actually got a fully worked solution to their Excel problems in about 10 minutes. So it looked like a fully manned help desk situation, but actually it was just people with a little bit of free time coming together and helping other people out. So that's sort of the moment where people understood that this wasn't just about posting cat photos or doing something like that. It actually got their day job done, and more quickly and more efficiently, and there was collaboration across the organization with people you probably never actually met in person. So it's at that point where you personally have this moment where you understand value, and that's where, as an organization, you can sort of shift the dial in terms of progressing from just building some sort of online brand to actually getting value out of the network.
Okay, so, I mean, obviously Yammer was a purchase from outside Microsoft, I think 2008 or 2009, if I remember. It was quite an amount of money. I would suggest that a lot of people would say that Yammer really hasn't been integrated dramatically into the Microsoft environment. Is that a fair comment, or is that, you know, just because Yammer obviously is a big thing for Microsoft to digest and roll into something like Office 365?
Well, I think that it is being digested, and that, to be fair, has been a slow process and probably slower than Microsoft had expected when they purchased Yammer. The thing that you look at now, and you see Microsoft recently came out and are realigning a number of their cloud sort of service offerings, if you like, and how they deliver them and who their target clients are and that sort of stuff. You saw that kind of mentality in Yammer a long time ago, and it is almost like Office 365 being cloud-based, being engagement-based, being used across a number of different use cases, things like that. That's been lifted from Yammer and actually rolled out more widely into Microsoft. So the concept of a CSM, Customer Success Manager, was originally within Microsoft probably a Yammer thing. And we're looking today at their complete reorganization into customer success as their driving metric. So you could say that it's been a long road, but at the same time, you actually have to look at how close they were to the road we're on for a while now.
Okay, so I think the other question too, the other big question is that with Microsoft's development or release of Teams, is Yammer still relevant, you know, in the Office 365 environment? There's a lot of, people who seem to think or seem to advocate that, you know, Yammer will be disappearing and or be integrated into Teams. I mean, what's your take on the Teams versus Yammer discussion?
Well, I think that for anyone who works professionally in this space, there is a general understanding that this stuff is hard. So actually trying to collaborate across an organization and providing technology that facilitates those interactions is a difficult problem. And there's no one tool that's going to wave a magic wand and solve it all. So the way that most people come to think about it now is that they are actually two very different products or have two very different use cases, and actually they can work together. So you take one metric that you can try and sort of classify them on is the frequency of the chat. So Teams is very high frequency chat, high velocity, some people call it. The sort of end result of that is you probably don't want to wade through a conversation in Teams that you weren't there for at the time. And Yammer's completely different in culturally, you see people crafting these essays of responses to people, well thought out, well reasoned. And this is something you can search through. This is something you can read at your leisure. This is something which is really informative to a really wide audience. The other sort of way of classifying them is, do you know who you need to talk to? So Teams, you have people who have been invited into the same space. It's generally a smaller number. And you know that the answer you need or the information you need or the audience you want to reach is in that group already. And Yammer's the complete opposite, which is you don't know who you want to reach. You don't know who has the right answer. Someone in your organization may, and you don't really know how to find them. So these two approaches can actually complement each other depending on what you want to do at the time. So you see Microsoft come towards that goal, which is they had this concept of inner and outer loops at Ignite, and they actually have the ability of embedding a Yammer group as a Teams tab. So these two things can actually work together. There was one of the presentations at Ignite that sort of took you through that from the MVPs and Teams as well. So this is actually not a us versus them kind of scenario as much as people might make out that it is. There's overlap, sure, but at the end of the day, they really do have a different purpose in how you want to work. And that can change from day to day. So you might use Teams for one particular project-based use case and then Yammer for the more emergent discovery aspects. So yep. Not dead, and they will actually work together. And the other quote I think that someone from the Teams team actually said to me was, no one has solved this at any scale. So there's no one product that actually will go from 10 users to 10,000 users and be good for all of it.
Yeah, look, there certainly is. And I think that it's interesting that at the moment, obviously, Teams is has the limelight. That is the big focus. It seems that Yammer can be very polarizing. People either love it and use it, or people hate it and really want to see it disappear, I suppose, or don't understand it at all. And you're right. I think they are two completely different tools, and they can be used in different ways. There are some commonalities. I like the analogy of the chat versus the, you know, the conversation or the discussion, which is much deeper, and also the concept that Microsoft's come up with the you know, the wider rings and who the audience actually is. Now, obviously, Yammer's been around for a little while, and it's still being integrated into the fully into the Microsoft environment, and that I think is going to give it a lot more credence with people when they see it linked directly to SharePoint and linked directly to Groups, which we know is coming. But based on what you saw and the information that comes that's come out of the recent Microsoft Ignite, I mean, what's your feedback or what's your opinions on what they've announced around the development for Yammer?
So I guess it is really positive in the way certainly the MVPs have viewed Yammer and the way we want it to be used. And what we're seeing is Microsoft listening to a number of the user voice requests and things like that, and actually building things that integrate this further into Office 365 in a way that actually makes people's lives easier. So you look at the product I make is very much group-based. So Yammer has a concept called, I'll call it little G group, which is different to the Office 365 capital G group. But the concept is you've got, you know, a collection of people having some sort of conversation. And that's very powerful because it separates the audience into people who actually care about the issue or the task or whatever you're talking about. And community management is trending towards these groups. So you've seen Yammer roll out a bunch of community manager analytics, creating new roles in Office 365 to view reports for groups. Obviously, there's the integration with SharePoint and groups and sites off the back of that, libraries and things like that. So the groups aspect and actually making groups kind of the center of the universe, if you like, rather than trying to have this unwieldy all company conversation all the time, is a really good direction. There's a few things which people are, I guess, making analogies to consumer products. So they're seeing that people want more creative control over their content. They've sort of announced things like rich text messages, things like reactions, which are more nuanced than just liking things, live video and sort of official posts and things like that for internal comms people. So all in all, the direction's really positive in terms of where they're going. I think that they're definitely in line with the certainly the MVPs who work in this space and advocate for people to use Yammer in that kind of way, and this just makes their job easier.
Yeah, look, I think that, again, we're seeing a lot of positives, and I think the greatest indication that Microsoft still has a focus on Yammer is the some of the announcements that come out of Ignite, the new stuff that they're talking about, the integration. So again, I think it may have got a lower priority, but it seems to now certainly be up there, and Microsoft perhaps acknowledging it as more a special tool that can be used, especially to drive adoption and to solve a number of problems. And Yammer was a very successful product, especially in the enterprise. So I think probably one of the questions we have at the small end, so if we look at the small end, the SMBs, the, you know, 5, 10, 15, you know, very small teams, does Yammer have a role to play for these people? Is there something that you think they should be looking to implement with Yammer, or is it something that they could just go straight to Teams? I mean, I think there is, and I think it depends on the company, but in your experience, is it really something that would have relevancy down to a very small group of people, where they're effectively sitting across the cubicle or across or in the same room as the other person?
So I think at that sort of level, you very practically do have a choice. So whether you want to use Yammer or Teams, it's probably not going to shift the dial a lot, whatever choice you make. The issue obviously is when you scale up. So if you are happy sitting there at 10 people for a very, very long time, then by all means, keep going with the Teams. If you think that it's going to scale up, then, you know, obviously the Yammer's the way to go. It's not so much of an issue. You look at the actual functionality that either provides, and then they're really much the same. Yammer's probably got a slightly easier adoption curve on it, in terms of you just kind of start it up and it goes, as against teams where if you want to make it productive, then they have a lot more functionality for you to explore. So you've got the connectors, you've got the bots, you've got a whole bunch of other functionality that can be added, but at the same time, probably Yammer's a cleaner interface to start off with.
And the other thing too in all of this is that Teams is now swallowing Skype for Business, so there's more that Teams product is taking on board and becoming a single hub. So I think, like you said, is Yammer having a very focused, service and not having a lot of extra stuff is a very good place to start for users, especially people who aren't used to social in their organization. I mean, they use it probably in their personal life, but they don't see how, or they haven't implemented within their business. So it gives it a very restricted focus, and I think that's where it plays a very significant role. I think it's very good for, like I said, sharing ideas globally, asking for help globally, and then obviously if there's a need to, they can move into the more specifics in the inner circle with something like Teams. So like I said, I certainly agree that it has a role, even down to the smallest business. I think part of it is that you've got these tool sets. You really need to look at it and say, well, you're getting Yammer as part of your suite license normally. It's a case of then, how do we actually use this tool? What could we actually use it for? Now, some of the case studies that I've seen places in Ireland that use it as a maintenance system. So there's, a bus company that has maintenance problems. The bus driver takes a picture, posts it on Yammer in the appropriate group. The maintenance people take over, and there's full visibility on it. So I think to me, the key aspect of Yammer is very much around search, is working out loud or working in the open. I think that is the transformational piece that people get by sharing that information publicly. So I agree with you. I think there's a huge amount of opportunity, no matter what the business is. Now, you mentioned earlier on that you also are developing apps or things in Yammer. What's all that about?
So if you go back to what we were talking about before, that Yammer was a startup, and as a startup, I guess they published an API, so people could get access to their Yammer data or their company's Yammer data and play with it and do whatever they want with it. So that aspect of the startup's actually been continued on despite the acquisition by Microsoft, and it sits a little bit outside of the Microsoft stack. So there's no concept of a tenant here. There's no concept of hybrid. You've got a single SaaS platform, which is Yammer, and they have an API. So that gives access to over 10 million end users once you get approved for sort of globalization by Microsoft. So there's a number of apps that sit in Yammer's app directory, and they offer extended functionality for what Yammer does. So I make an innovation-focused app. So it's a little bit like Kickstarter for Yammer. So you can have a challenge which someone puts out to a Yammer group. The people in the group can respond to that challenge by creating pitches. And that sits slightly outside Yammer because that process isn't well dealt with within Yammer. So Yammer is really good for the conversation about an idea, but when you have an idea that actually gets relatively complex, you need a way of sort of having a place to describe that idea, and that's Ideocial. So that sits slightly outside Yammer, but it's an integration for Yammer.
Okay, so how long did it take to build that? Was that a long process? It was so what's involved in coding something up like that?
The actual process of creating an app's really easy. So it's REST API. There are a bunch, Yammer even publishes a bunch of libraries in JavaScript, Ruby, Python, .NET, whatever language you want to do. And anyone at any company can create an app. So you can create an app for your company if you want to explore the Yammer data or make or integrate some sort of internal process with Yammer. Obviously the complexity from then you can do whatever you want and build the product that comes along. So this has been going for a little over 3 years now. it's developed as a product. It's got new features and things like that. So it's got a hackathon version, which you have a set of judges who judge the pitches and things like that, and then you have a crowd vote. And so the product has evolved, and that's been an experience. But the actual process of creating an app is really easy, and you can do it just as a regular Yammer user.
Okay, all right. So is there a lot of apps out there for Yammer, and where will we look if we were looking for those apps? Is there a marketplace we can go to?
Yeah, so in Yammer, there's something called an app directory. So if you go to, there's usually a little gear icon in Yammer on the sort of left of the screen, and then there's a little puzzle piece which says apps. And you can go there and you can see what apps have been published, either by external providers or by your own company. So they have an app directory. Some of them are free, some of them are trial, some of them are paid. You can add things to your Yammer account to sort of make the experience a bit better.
Okay, so... do you see that the path forward with Yammer is deeper and deeper integration? That it to an extent, I mean, is Yammer going to lose its identity into the Microsoft stack sort of thing, or is it going to, you know, still be a bit of this, you know, startup mentality a little bit on the side? Do you see? I mean, what's sort of the future and the direction you see of Yammer, given the obviously the way Office 365 is growing and beginning to pull these services closer in and trying to integrate them much deeper together?
Yeah, so I see Yammer, it will get closer to Office 365. There's no doubt about that. I guess it's a cultural thing that I think will be preserved. It's the people who I've met who work at Microsoft in Yammer are very focused on end user adoption, engagement, cultural transformation issues. And that's a very different audience to the typical sales process at Microsoft, which is more IT focused. So that part of it, I think, will continue. And while that does continue, I think you will have this friction between Microsoft is this really large tech company doing some amazing things. There's Office, and that is just, you know, the go-to tool for making documents and forms and Excel and whatever else. But this collaboration thing, I think they have the opportunity here to actually nail the collaboration space. So Yammer will evolve to make people's life easier to work out loud and to collaborate. And I think generally we have to be more nuanced with the term collaboration. And I think that's what you'll see going forward, which is Microsoft saying what is collaboration, and Yammer is not necessarily the thing that does the collaboration. It's the thing that does the interactions. But the collaboration, if you think about it as literally working together, you have co-authoring in documents, things like that. Is that collaboration, or is the collaboration trying to find someone who knows something that you don't yet understand? So it's trying to get a whole bunch of different behaviors into a cultural transformation that I think Microsoft has this thing called Yammer, which will stay a little bit true to its roots in that sense, and things will sort of move around it, and it will get slowly embedded into the Office 3, or better embedded into the Office 365 world in a good way. So whether that ends up being Office 365 becomes more like Yammer and Yammer sort of disappears as an identity, I don't know. But you will see a shift towards what Yammer represents, I think.
Okay, so obviously, we've sort of seen this, I suppose, two products or two ideas from different ends of the world. The Yammer being born in the cloud, being collaborative, being all about ad hoc to an extent, where Microsoft's come from, the file server, files and folders, you know, rows and columns in Excel. So that's obviously a very different culture. Now, somewhere in the middle, we've got something like Teams, which embraces both and incorporates things like SharePoint, and now embraces the Yammer side of it, and they can, you know, work together. If someone was to look at, you know, what's the best way to get started with Yammer, is it just a case of, you know, fire it up, start typing messages, or is there some structure or some sort of steps you would recommend somebody initially getting into Yammer who's wanting to use it effectively, you know, for their business that's maybe got 25 to 50 employees, maybe two or three locations, people on the road? You know, is it just a case of, radio, knock yourselves out, guys, and see what comes out? Or is it a case of, okay, do it in this sort of process?
I think that sort of, there's two parts to answering that question. The first is, organizationally, what do you want to get out of it? And absolutely, there is an element of, you have to teach people to use this stuff. You have to teach people that actually writing a group email is not necessarily the best way of having a conversation. Yammer's a different way of having that conversation. It's slightly more efficient and slightly less annoying to a lot of people. So there's that sort of training element at an organizational level to rolling this out. And Yammer is really easy to roll out. It doesn't mean that there doesn't need to be a deliberate purpose behind it. So it does try and help you when you sign up, and it recommends people that you follow and groups that you create and things like that. So absolutely, definitely at the smaller end of the spectrum, it is really easy to roll out. It's just having that in the back of your mind at an organizational level that you actually want to be more collaborative in some way, and having a purpose, and having that purpose sort of very clear, is one way of doing it. And that mentality and that approach will scale from, you know, 25 people up to thousands of people. So you definitely need that purpose at that larger scale. The other part is, at a personal level, what do you want to get out of it? So rolling it out is an amazing opportunity to listen to people. It's an amazing opportunity to create a brand where people don't necessarily see you face to face all the time. So one of the people I used to work for used to write a weekly post about his life and thoughts and things like that. And the reason he did that was because he had a globally distributed team that he didn't really see all the time. He had to go traveling to go see them. And he actually got them to know him as a person and understand his mentality and motivations a lot better by doing that on Yammer and establishing a personal brand. So it doesn't have to be a targeted work goal necessarily, but having a rapport with people who you work with is a way of getting stuff done better. And Yammer's one way of doing that. And I found it really interesting that there were graduates at the bank. I'm probably in the category of people who were batting slightly above their weight in terms of their online profile versus where they sat in the organization structure. And that's the opportunity. So you can actually establish, at a very personal level, a brand, and you can use that to get better business outcomes.
Okay, so at the other end of the spectrum, what's your recommendation on maybe a Yammer network or a Yammer environment that sort of died? It's lost its zeal. Everybody's really keen first up, you know, all into it, and then from there it's sort of petered off. People just haven't found time, haven't found an excuse, don't find the information relevant. Are there any strategies there or tricks that may help to get people, you know, to come back into Yammer, to share more, to be open? Is there something that can be done there?
There is, and it again comes back to the purpose. So do you have a deliberate campaign to effectively relaunch this way of working? And you have to take a little bit of a step back and understand why that has happened. So what have been the barriers to actually getting people engaged with this product? One of the things that actually happens a lot of the time, and it's not so much the Yammer dying, but you can use Yammer to hold a mirror to your organization. So to the extent that people are, let's say, sharing cat photos or something like that, or having gripes, angry posts, that kind of thing, that is a mirror to your organization's culture. And Yammer's very good at surfacing what people won't necessarily say. There's almost a hyper reality about what people will type into a technology platform but won't say to your face. So you can use that for a tremendous amount of good if you're very good at listening. But it is all about, particularly with the reboots, finding a purpose that people actually want to engage with, and understanding that purpose, educating people that this is the technology platform that you're going to use to try and solve that problem, and then hopefully that will snowball a little bit into using the platform for other things, which are sort of other purposes, but not one that you had thought of at first.
Yeah, I like the concept you've got there of a psychotherapy service. I really like that. I think that would certainly apply to a lot of organisations, a way for people to obviously share things with the machine and then end up sharing it with everybody else. So probably a good idea there.
It makes no sense though, because you have these certainly on consumer profiles, anonymous platforms and what have you, but on Yammer and in Teams and whatever else, your profile photo's there, your name's clearly visible to what you write, but yet people still do the same thing, which is really interesting.
Well, again, like I said, sharing it publicly can have its downsides, and there's nothing you can do about it except just make sure that you're aware that it is a public service, which many people don't seem to appreciate. But for good or for worse, it does provide some lots of benefits for an organisation. So as we're getting towards the end of our time here, is there anything else that you'd like to let people know about Yammer, or what's coming down the track, or the apps that you're looking at developing? Is there anything else that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Ideocial, certainly the innovation platform, was the first probably of a number of things that we've done. So there's been innovation, there's been a photo sharing thing, there's been a word cloud app. The next one that's probably coming is what we've called Cadence. So that's more a community manager tool, and that's about curating posts, about providing a sort of a source of news and publishing platform for people who really want to, again, have purpose about what they're publishing on Yammer. So that's in the pipeline. There's a bunch of other really cool startups and not so startups out there that are doing Yammer stuff in the app directory. So and I know that they're all doing some great things. So Yammer is this thing that will never die, and it's a great place to be as a startup at the moment. And within Office 365, it's only going to grow and provide more opportunity.
Excellent. All right. Well, there's been great information there. And I think a lot of it, too, is I suppose, not cut and dried. It's not a registry hack that you make. It's I suppose, a registry hack for your business. It's a culture thing. It's about sitting down and thinking about this concept of sharing. Everybody talks about collaboration. Everybody talks about wanting to do this sort of stuff, but nobody really comes at it, in my experience, with a plan. I think that's what will make any of these collaboration tools a much greater chance of success if you sit down and plan it, as Benjamin's noted. So how can people get in contact with you if they want more information about Yammer or the stuff you're doing or the software that you're developing?
Ideocial, www.ideocial.com, or hi@ideocial.com.
Excellent. All right. Well, I'll make sure that I get all that information and put it in the show notes for everybody to take hold of and get in contact with Benjamin if they need to or have further questions. Again, I'll thank Benjamin for his time. Again, all that information, and hopefully, like I said, we can get him back on in the future when we get some more updates and more information about Yammer, and we can look in the rearview mirror and just see how much better it's got, which seems to be the case with just about every Office 365 product these days. So it's really going along in great guns. So just to finish off, I mean, what's your, again, your take on this whole Office 365, you know, the Yammer, the Exchange Online, the SharePoint? What are you seeing out there in the market as to uptake, acceptance, usage? You know, what's sort of the general vibe out there?
What I'm seeing is people really understanding what technology choices have been made on their behalf. So if you have a look at, you know, even just a few years ago, people didn't know what their email ran on. People knew they had an email account, but they didn't necessarily know the technology choices that went into that. And in terms of the end users, that now means that people know that they've got these products and incredibly powerful products that they can find themselves, you know, how to use them and how to best use them and things like that. And they're being rolled out by default across the organization. And that's a really powerful thing to have happen. And a realization from a lot of people that actually they're being given all these tools as part of a suite of products, when maybe a few years ago they would have been rolled out piecemeal, not necessarily in a transparent way. So that access and learning how to use all this technology and just making your life easier is really the way of the future.
Yeah, I also think too, my comment on that would be is what we're seeing is people within the organization are getting the same tools. You know, everybody gets the same license generally. Before it was, you know, someone had Outlook 2007, someone had 2010, someone had this version, that version, different PCs. So again, I think people are beginning to get a very standard layer across the organization, which makes things a lot easier, removes that sort of friction out of it, gives people the tools to go out there and achieve. And the great thing with the Office 365 environment is that, you know, it's constantly updating, they're constantly getting improvements, and as we've seen, we're getting more and more services and more improvements in the front and the back end. So it's enabling, as you say, people to really go out there and achieve and use the tools and push the technology into the background so that they can really use it to the best effect for their business. They can use some of it, all of it. The choice is now theirs, and again, it's on a nice month by month and per user subscription, so I think that's great. All right, so again, I'll thank Ben for his time tonight being on the podcast. I'll make sure I get all that information out to people, and again, I thank everybody for listening to this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.